This is Jim
and Debbie
from Gamers Rule,
and you're listening to Roll for Initiative.
That's a very good thing, you know. Correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your Gamers Rule. www.d20radio.com.
Roll for Initiative.
Welcome back to the Roll for Initiative podcast. Issue number 28. We're almost 30 years old, guys. You believe that? Well, issue's 30 years old.
30 issues old.
I wish I was 28 again.
Yeah. So we're back.
I was an idiot at 28, or more of one. I don't need to go backwards.
We all were idiots at 28.
If you're just stepping into this podcast for the first time, this is the Roll for Initiative podcast, the only podcast dedicated to Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. I am one of your hosts, DM Vince, along with DM Jason. Jason, say hello to everybody.
Hello to everybody.
Nick, you can do the same.
Hello to everybody. How are you?
And we have two comedians here with us today, folks. Anyway, let's let's step right into the nitty gritty, and let's talk about our website, RFI Podcast. No,
RFI.com.
Wow, I was thinking of the email address.
RFIPodcast.com.
That's right.
Where there's a new article up right now.
Yes.
The ecology of the, what is it, Nick?
The Mantari.
Yeah,
From the Fiend Folio.
Every week you can go to our site and see a new plus two to save article from Todd Hughes, and this week is the ecology of the
Mantari. What was that about?
I couldn't remember.
Oh, okay.
His brain locked up too.
Yeah. That's because we're getting old, right?
Yeah. Yep. I don't know. This is the youngest I'm ever going to be, so let's get started.
My hair is white. My teeth are gray. And
TMI again, Nick. So what did you do this week for as far as gaming-wise? You guys do anything?
Well, we're getting actually set up right now to start a couple of new campaigns. So one in-person and one online. Mm-hmm. The online Skype game, we've got about seven different listeners from the RFI podcast. Citizens of RFI.
The RFI Army.
Who?
That's it. RFI Army.
Subjects of the kingdom? I don't know.
Wow.
comrades in arms, something like that.
Ruskies.
So, red shirts?
Well, I hope not red shirts, because we need them to make it through the first module.
Yeah.
So we're going to start that next week. We're just getting into character creation right now, and I'm just building up the world for that. So it's anticipation.
Any hints or tidbits about the campaign you want to give away or no?
No, partially because I don't want to give away anything to the players, and partially because I'm still figuring it out. But I will tell you this: we are literally going to be hitting the ground running on the first one. I'll tell you how we started out the first adventure after we do it next week. But I've got a fun way to get started.
Okay, great. Cool.
And this, okay. I know you're running one too. So,
well, I wanted to ask you about when your start, so everybody gets an idea.
Oh, yeah. So it starts next Wednesday. We're going to play every Wednesday night. We are
August
recording it. I don't know.
5th?
The 25th, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if we're going to actually put any of the play up, because I know you've got yours, and maybe that's too much, and we'll see how it goes. But it might be worth it, because it'll probably be a little different, because in our game, we're going to be playing very by the book. We're going to be using armor class adjustments,
ooh,
encumbrance, pummel grapple rules, the weaponless combat rules, all kinds of stuff like that.
All kinds of nitpicking by-the-book stuff.
Yes.
I'm going to
see if I can show that you can play with all those by-the-book rules and keep the action moving fast and furious and fun.
But I have one question for you.
What's that?
Are you going to use Saya? No!
He got you on that one.
I knew you were going, no psionics, no. Even if we wander into Gamma World, no psionics.
All right. That's for another show, we'll talk about that.
But how about yours?
Mine is four. I have four players from our listeners that are from Facebook, and two external, but I'm going to be taking some more players just in case as backups, in case someone wants to back out and they can't make it. So, but it's going to be starting on September 2nd, which is Saturday, between 2 and 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Wow, Labor Day weekend.
Is it Labor Day weekend? Maybe I'll have to start.
I think so.
Is it? I may have to start another weekend because some people might be away. So I'll discuss it with them. I'll email them personally and we'll chat about it. I was going to start it next weekend, but I got BetaCon to go to. So
cool. What is BetaCon?
It's a local PA convention for this side of the state that happens once a year. So
can people still sign up to go?
Yeah, you can walk into the door and buy a ticket if you want. It's $15. It's that cheap.
Oh, not bad at all.
Well, anybody who's in this neck of the woods, check it out.
And we got, in November, we got MEPACON, the big convention for Pennsylvania that probably 300-500 people show up to. I mean, it's not as big as Gen Con, but it's still big for PA.
That's pretty good size for a local con. You get around 300-500 people.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good crowd.
The guys from Dead Game Society said they might come down. Check
nice.
It out. I was trying to bribe Jason to come down, but he said he was busy doing low tech con.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of cons, we have heard back from a couple of people who seem to like the idea, so I haven't given up on it yet.
You haven't backed out yet?
Nope, it's been a whole week and I haven't backed out.
Oh, anyway, sweet. So about my campaign you were asked, I'm sorry, I ran around that whole question.
Yeah, how are you going to run it? What's up?
Mine is, obviously, you know, my style is a lot different than yours. I'm not by the book. I don't use weapon speeds or armor class adjustments. I'm just going to do it and have fun with it, and it's going to be a great campaign.
Cool.
So, yeah, maybe we will, you know, at least put up one of each or something.
Mine's going to be recorded and released on a different feed than RFI because we don't want to annoy people with actual, because a lot of people don't want to hear that.
Right, so we'll put stuff up on the website and on the Facebook page. Anybody yeah. wants to listen, there will be instructions on how to get that.
Yeah, that'll be a separate feed. You want it, you get it. If you don't worry about it. No one will take offense to it. But mine will be like a weekly feature, putting up episodes and seeing how that goes for how long it goes.
Very also, cool. Actually, since you bring that up, any listeners who use the RFI podcast iPhone app,
yes.
It currently only has the ability to keep a single feed in it. So, let us know if you feel left out because we're not putting the live play into that, and we'll find a way to put it in. But I don't want to, to what you just said, I don't want to block up people's stuff.
We'll get our Tinker Gnomes on that as soon as possible.
Great. Yeah. They'll break it then. All right, so we'll head into Sage Advice next.
Okay.
Oh, you wanted to say something, Nick?
Well, you know, I mean, as far as gaming is concerned, yeah.
Well, we don't care. Go ahead, Nick. I'm sorry. I apologize, buddy.
You know, there's another one here who does gaming, too.
Oh, wait, there's Nick here?
Yeah!
I thought it was just the Jason and Vince show.
Okay.
Go on, buddy.
But anyway, this Saturday got the our regular game going back on again after a extended hiatus. The Quest for Bob, as we've been calling it.
Quest for Bob.
So we're looking for Bob.
What about Bob?
Yeah, what about Bob?
But it's taking a very interesting turn. We're heading into places, literally places we never thought we'd go. And what else? One thing I saw is, I don't know how a lot of people out there have heard of it, but I have the whole series on VHS. The company who made Record of Lodoss War.
Yeah, I love that.
It's out on YouTube for anybody to see now.
What is it? I don't even know it.
The Record of Lodoss? It was a Japanese animation of Dungeons and Dragons. So, it's supposed to be, they couldn't get the legal rights to actually call it Dungeons and Dragons, so they made up their own world based off of Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, pretty much.
Really?
Essentially,
really good.
The whole story is based off of somebody's D&D campaign.
Yeah.
So,
highly recommend it,
Jason. Recommend watching it. Yeah. It's really fun.
All right, so we'll put that one in the show notes, how to go and see that on YouTube. We'll put those up.
Yeah, that's really cool. And
Sadly, you can't buy that for some reason.
Oh, no, that's okay. I just also had one other really awesome idea. I've been kind of not DMing for a few months now, but I just got a really cool idea from somebody off of dragonsfoot.org for a campaign idea. And I asked him, like, dude, that's like perfect. Can I use that? And I don't want to say anything else about it, but I'm completely jazzed about it, and I just can't wait to get started on it. Probably this fall. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Sounds awesome. Is it going to be your local group?
Yeah, absolutely. It's got to be my local gaming group. They have no idea what's going to be in store. It's going to be a major twist where they think things are going to be. So I'm really excited about it.
You have to keep us updated on this.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be very cool.
All right.
Sage advice.
Sage advice. So we had a really interesting first letter. I'm sorry, Nick, were you saying something?
He was singing along as well.
Oh, I'm sorry, buddy.
Sage advice.
No more.
All right. Sorry, Jason.
My ears. My poor ears.
We actually had our first email, which I forwarded to you, Jason. It was kind of interesting, so I wanted you to actually read it, if you don't mind.
Oh, okay. You know what? Actually, let me make sure I'm looking at the right one here where Nick writes in, right?
No, the Wombat one.
Oh, the Wombat one. Okay, I actually have to pop over to that. Why don't you go to Nick's first?
All right, Nick, you read the email from Nick.
Yes. I wrote into myself because I'm schizophrenic.
Okay.
Another Nick, he writes in and says, I'm interested in listening to first edition actual play recordings / podcasts. It's so interesting to hear how other DMs create their worlds and how other players play. I managed to find one on iTunes called Expedition to the Ancient Academy. And by the way, yeah, I've heard that one too.
I was just looking that up because I was going to see if I could mention it because I've listened to it and I think it's kind of neat.
Yeah, I want to listen to it too.
I have some comments when you're done about that, so go ahead.
Yeah, he says, do you know of any others? Your creature feature segments are the great teasers, and I do enjoy them, but I'd also love to hear some dedicated actual play sessions. I know you are planning on running a Skype game. Will that be recorded and available for download? I'm not able to commit. Well, there we go. We just answered it in this show. I'm not able to commit to a weekly game at this point, but I'm sure I'm not the only one who would enjoy listening to the gameplay. Thanks for the great show. I look forward to each issue, and I truly enjoyed last week's interview episode with Frank Metzer. Inspiring. And
well, thank you, Nick.
That was Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome.
All right. So have you guys listened to the Expedition to Ancient Academy podcast?
Yes. You know what? I just wanted to mention one more really quickly that I think is a first edition. It's called Thistledown Actual Play. So, and it's pretty easy. Just go to thistledownap.com. And I believe they're playing first edition. It's an actual play podcast. So just one more for you. I haven't listened to it, though.
Okay. We'll have to check that out and, you know, tell people about it next time when we come back.
Yeah.
Expedition.
Have you listened to Expedition to Ancient Academy, Jason?
Yes.
I have too.
It's pretty good.
Well, the sound quality, you know, isn't always top notch, but, you know, it's a bunch of people sitting around a table. And I've listened to it and I found it really interesting just because, like the writer was saying, it's nice to hear how other people run their games.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed it.
Cool.
All right, so my opinions on Expedition to the Ancient Academy. I listened to all the episodes because it was basic D&D, first of all. It's not actually first edition, which I don't care. I like basic D&D. It's great. And then, suddenly, out of nowhere, it became fourth edition D&D without explanation whatsoever.
Really?
They just jumped into the next episode. Was just like, okay, guys, we're gathered up tonight, and we'll be playing fourth edition. I'm like, why?
Huh?
Yeah. And then it gets even better, because then the next four, after those four, they started playing Deadlands.
What's that?
It's a Savage World game. It's a sci-fi horror western.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And it was just like with no explanation, they just kept jumping games, and they need to change their description.
Well, okay, maybe they should change their description, but I gotta say, we do that in our gaming group. We have nights where we just pull out a different game. So I understand.
Well, Expedition to the Ancient Academy, while Jason said the sound quality is not that great, but it's still interesting to listen to.
Right. So if you're looking for first edition actual play, make sure you check which episode, I guess, you're listening to of theirs.
Yeah.
So you don't end up listening to, what was it, Vampire Space Monsters from Monkey Island?
Deadlands. Or Deadlands real quick.
Vampire Space Monkeys.
That'd be a cool game, Vampire Space Monkeys.
Yeah, well, I won't even be. I've been getting into, like, you know, buying all these games that I've never played before, and they're starting to
pile
up on
the shelf. Sounds like a 50s B movie.
Could be, yeah.
Greasers from Outer Space, you know, something
like that. By Ed Wood.
Yeah. Oh, don't even get into that.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that, and of course you'll have the first edition actual play coming right out of Roll for Initiative, so there you go.
Straight from the minds of whoever plays.
Yep.
All right, next email comes from Steve T., who wrote in and asked about a Dungeons & Dragons gray book. It's a colored gray book with the original Holmes cover on it, with an old TSR logo on the front cover, which was printed that way, but it also had a Wizards of the Coast logo in it, and it was edited by... I forgot the name. I think it was Steve Enns.
Which game is it?
It's a mix mash of first edition and basic D&D put together. So
I've never heard of this.
It's not an official. It's a fan work.
So I was going to say, this would be a question for Jim and Debbie.
Yeah. It looks like an official book, but it's just someone who decided to edit a bunch of rules together because he didn't even change any of the words. He just put a forward in from himself and did a mishmash editing of OD&D, Basic, and First Edition.
Wow, that's interesting. Where did the listener get this?
He found it on 4shared.com.
What's that?
It's a sharing network of files and various other things.
Oh, so it wasn't even a printed thing.
No.
It was a download.
It was a download. He went in there and he searched D&D and found Greybook, and I was like, dude, I think that's a fan work.
Yeah, I mean, never rely on downloads for stuff.
Yeah, but he wanted us to address it.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't find a book, and the only way to get it is to get a download of it, that's great. At least you have a chance to look at it. But who knows what people put in those things.
Yeah.
So,
they could put, like, you know, Ooga Booga, and that'd be an official rule.
But in, I will play with that.
Vampire Space Bats or something like that.
It was Vampire Space Monsters from Monkey Island, actually.
Oh, excuse me.
Sorry, yes.
Follow my rules. if, however, anybody does ever come across something that they think is a little bit surprising or odd, or you want to know when something was made, or you just have a question about something weird, really go to something weird about TSR products, that is, go to gamers-rule.com and look for some contact info for Jim and Debbie, because they really are the authorities. Well, they know the most when it comes to what's out there, and they might be able to help you out.
Or you can just go to us, because you're listening to us, so RFI
staff
at gmail.com.
Yeah, and then I'll ask Jim and Debbie. So I look smarter.
You're not supposed to
relay the message.
Yeah, you're not supposed to give away our secrets, buddy.
All right. So we got another message here that I've managed to find now from Mark, who says, Jason, out of curiosity, did your friend named Wombat happen to live in Massachusetts and attend WPI in the 87 to 92 range? If so, then I know him too. Small world. If not, what's the likelihood of two people who are both nicknamed Wombat? Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Probably is not him. just so you know, his real name is Dan H. I won't give his last name. Mm-hmm. But Dan H. So if your friend is named Dan H., then let me know. But the thing is he picked up that nickname in San Francisco somewhere around, I would say, 95 or so. Because, I mean, he may have gone to school in Massachusetts at that time. He'd be the right age maybe to have gone there, but I'm pretty sure he went to SF State. And the odds, he basically was just hyperactive, and a friend of ours thought that wombats were hyperactive, and so, which I don't think they are, and named him that. And but he's one of the most intelligent and creative and brilliant people you'll ever meet. So there you go. And the odds of two people both nicknamed Wombat, I would say, sounds like 100%.
Yeah, obviously. So. All right. So then, don't think you have any more emails. If you want to email us, rfistaff@gmail.com, or you can leave a... Oh, that's right, Jason. You had some comments from the website.
Yeah.
Sorry, I apologize. Go ahead.
Just one. Actually, I'm just going to pull up one because this is pretty interesting. I like what this guy has to say. DM Remus commented on, I don't know which, but it was on the website. And he's, I don't know which story he was commenting on, but it doesn't, you know, it was actually way back. He just went up and put a comment on issue 14, Creating Your Own Adventure.
Oh, okay.
But he just made this comment. And we see this a lot. I really like it when people go and they comment on older shows. It means they're going back and catching up, or that's how they're, you know, whatever. It's cool.
They're taking the time to learn about us.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we wanted the podcast to be, right? Something kind of like Spirit of the Old Dragon magazine, where just because it's old doesn't mean you don't go back and read it again or listen to it again.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, it's a good resource. And he's talking about backstabs, and he says about the backstab.
Right.
That's actually the first four words of his comment, about the backstab.
Okay.
I've always preferred the version of the backstab found in the D&D rule cyclopedia. The backstab itself is not actually a literal backstab. It's actually more of a sucker punch that does more damage, not just because it's aimed at a vital point, but it's not being defended against. It's all about catching the target by surprise. I mean, think about it this way. A fighter knows where to hit someone, probably better than a thief would, but the fighter doesn't get extra damage because the fighter doesn't typically sucker punch someone. Also, the thief is well aware that he or she is not a frontliner and is not interested in an upfront fight, so the thief is going to do the next best thing, take someone out in one or two shots.
Huh. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I'm not familiar with the D&D rule cyclopedia, but if that's the way that it goes there, then he's making a pretty good argument for it.
Yeah.
It completely fits the idea of what is supposed to happen in a round. It doesn't fit the way that I would play it in my game, but I get his logic.
The rules cyclopedia is based off of the Mensa rules, the Mensa box sets, the five that came out during the 80s.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right.
It's kind of like a re-editing add-on to it, but it's... All right. Without going too much into detail, I don't like it. It's too second edition for me feeling. That's the end of my comment.
The one thing that kind of makes sense then, if that's what it's based on, is Frank Mensa said something at the auction, at the Gen Con auction a couple of weeks ago.
What did he say?
Where he was talking about Legendary Adventures.
Oh, okay.
And now that I'm starting to say this, this might actually not have been Frank. It might have been Tim Kask that said it. Whatever, I'm going to pretend it was Frank, and then somebody can tell me I got it wrong. No, actually, you can go listen to one of our little mini podcasts, the little special dispatches we did, because I did actually record it and put it up on there. And he was talking about the first time that he ever came across Legendary Adventures. He didn't even know that Gary Gygax had done it, and he just looked at it and said, wait a minute, and actually maybe this was Frank, and he's looked at it and he said, wait a minute, this is what we were always talking about back in the day, the kind of rules that would just be common sense. If you fall in the river, you don't do a bunch of weight tables, you just go, hey, if you're wearing chainmail and your pockets are full of gold and you're in the river, you're going to sink.
Yeah.
Common sense.
Yeah, that's common sense.
There you go.
So, you know, that kind of makes, it's kind of common sense on the thief's backstab, is that if you got a minute worth of activity going on and the thief gets in there and knows how to, you know, pull a sucker punch, then he doesn't have to be literally behind him. Just common sense. He got a sucker punch in.
Yeah.
So I don't play it that way, but I think that it's a good way to say it.
Yeah, the rules in Psychopedia, a lot of people like, some people don't. You all have your own opinion. Well, actually, let's hear what you have to think about it. So you can email us. Was there another comment, Jason, or that was it?
Nah, that's good.
Oh, okay.
Well, why not call it Sucker Punch then?
Well, maybe he does.
Okay.
Okay, valid argument. Anyway, so let's head over into the creature feature, which we can talk about our tactics from last week.
Creature theater.
Nick, you're on the podium again.
Yeah, creature feature. So, last week, you guys had a bit of a combat with the Ankh-Heg from the Monster Manual. I think I pronounced that right.
But if not, there is actually a dragon number 93 or something that tells you how to pronounce things, so you can always check.
I'll go with my spell checker in my brain for now. So
Ankh-Heg sounds good to me.
Yeah, Ankh-Heg sounds good. So actually, you guys did pretty well on that one.
Well, we killed it.
Yeah, you killed it. Yes, cut the thing in two with a lightning bolt. That always works.
All right, I got to ask you. When we dropped down into the pit where there were the two tunnels, I webbed up one of the tunnels.
Right.
Did that make any difference?
Absolutely not.
But it was a good plan, Jason. I liked it.
Well, there could have been two.
Yeah.
There could have been two. But there wasn't. So...
you chose the Ankh-Heg to be behind the one I didn't web, didn't you?
No, actually, I randomly rolled it.
Really? Seriously, would have allowed the web to block the Ankh-Heg?
Sure.
Huh.
That's nice of you.
Because that's how I roll.
So tell us a little bit about this creature.
Yeah. It's going out of the Monster Manual. It's a large insect type creature, burrows to the earth like an earthworm. It prefers to be in soil like around forests and agricultural land, hence why when you cleared out through those hills, they were in those farmlands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. They told you that there was that strange creature that was making people disappear. They wouldn't be seen again, or if they were found, they were dead. Let's see. Since its mouth is not designed to rip or tear meat, its mandibles crush its prey and secrete a digestive enzyme, causing an additional 1 to 4 points of damage till the prey is completely dissolved. And so, pretty hefty damage, even from the mandibles. 3 to 18 points of damage, plus the 1 to 4 points per turn.
Yeah.
So, pretty nasty in itself. Also, it has the ability once a day, I believe, to spit up digestive acid.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I felt that.
Which, yeah, you got real close to that. That which can cause 8 to 32 points of damage if it hits.
Yeah.
So, and one of the things I like about this creature, right at the beginning of the book too, it's one. There is even a little brief description on like a little bit of a combat tactic for this thing in its description. It says the Ankh-Heg's favorite method of attacking is lying 5 to 10 feet underneath the ground until its antenna detects a likely victim passing overhead. Then it burrows out directly underneath the prey and grabs it. So that's cool. A little bit of a tactic idea when using this thing.
Yeah.
Also, I found kind of interesting is its hit dice are variable. You can have a small one from 3 hit dice or to a big bad mama jama up to 8 hit dice. So in this respect, this is a creature where you can use from low to probably mid-level, almost in what you might consider high-level play. Because of the range of hit dice this thing can that could be. And also it has 2 different armor classes, a little weird in that respect. Its underside has a lower has a worse armor class than the rest of its body. Its underside is armor class 4 versus the rest of the body of 2. So depending on where you hit, you can randomly determine, I guess, by the GM. And this is something with AD&D where there wasn't a mechanic to figure this out. It was up to the DM where you decided that, where you hit. Did you get on top of the thing? Did you get on the bottom of the thing? So there's a little free form in that respect. I kind of like that.
Were you playing it that way when we were going up against it?
I kind of left it to a random roll, 50-50 chance. You hear it in the top or the bottom of the thing. So I left completely up to the dice to decide where you hit.
Yeah, so I think I would definitely allow a called shot in this case because, players like to say, can I go for the soft underbelly or whatever? And
oh, sure.
This is a good opportunity to do that. I don't know if I would give it a 50-50 chance since it probably would be smart enough not to expose its unplated areas too often.
I'd maybe make
it about a 5% chance of hitting that.
Possibly.
Or, I wouldn't even sit there rolling that many dice, to be honest. I'd probably just every now and then go, yeah, I think now is the time.
Yeah, you can play it that way. I was kind of playing it to where factoring in also the maneuvering of the player characters, trying to get a better shot at the creature, stuff like that. So, other than that, it's just a big nasty bug. So,
this looks a little bit like a praying mantis the way they've drawn it in here.
Yeah, it's a nice picture of it. Some of Tramp's cooler works, I think. So
does it have is there a number of appearing only one, or you only picked one?
Well, generally one to six.
One to six, okay.
So, you could have like a whole bunch of these things of varying hit dice.
Yeah, okay.
Probably have like a leader and a bunch of younger ones or something. I'd probably give the hit dice, be like the older ones are bigger and more hit dice and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what I like about what you're saying is whenever you're talking about pulling up a monster, you don't have to say just because you've got a high-level group that they can't go up against Lizardmen, for example. Lizardman doesn't have to be 2 hit dice, and Ankheg doesn't have to be 3 hit dice. You know, you can go in here and start messing with these things.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
You know, and I think it's a really good way when you're DMing to kind of mix it up with your players, because they see something coming up and they say, well, you know, that's not going to be a big deal. That's just a, you know, it's just a giant ant.
Yeah,
what's a giant ant going to do to me? Well, this is a special one. You know, and with the Ankheg, it kind of encourages that right off the bat. Anywhere from 3 to 8 hit dice, you don't have any idea what you're going up against.
Exactly. It like you said, it keeps a bit of it keeps the players on their toes a little bit, because they're not sure how tough this creature actually is when they run into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when players start doing the whole, you know, you start describing something, they're like, kobolds. You know, that's when you want to be like, ah, these are actually 14 hit dice kobolds with psionic powers.
Yeah.
True. We're gonna juice them up and throw them at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've done that. Believe me, I've done that to players.
Vince, you remember you were saying about doing that with a beholder once. Going the other way around, so.
Yeah, I made it a little tiny, like, 1-inch creature. Fooled the players entirely. They were like, what? Hey, never said.
Works both ways.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I've also made one-eyed red hobgoblins that explode.
One-eyed ones. Explode?
Yeah, wow. When they die, there was a 70% chance that they would explode.
That's cool.
Nice.
Yeah, because I'm evil.
Very evil.
Yes.
You're quasi-evil. All right, so that'd be kind of cool. Do we have any other... Was the tactics that you used something you just came up with out of nowhere, or...?
Well, you know, being an insect, I guess you could classify this as an insect. I don't know. I played it as just any sort of creature who's trying to defend what it considers its lair. Who's to say that this was the only one? There could have been others out there, too. So.
Okay, cool. Well, just let's hear how some other people out there do it. I think we described it enough. We gave a little bit of a tactic. We went over it really briefly. I mean, we're not going to, you know, beat the dead horse. You can just flip up from the monster manual.
Or the dead Ankheg.
Boom, boom, boom. And you can look at it yourself, Nick with the bad, bad joke. And we're going to head into our next segment of the night.
Typical. Of all the evil creatures in the world, I'd like to find one with table manners.
What, are you kidding me? I spent years cultivating the worst table manners on the planet.
Table manners.
So if we were actually going in order tonight, like I should have done per the notes, this is where the creature feature should have been, and this is where now the table manners is.
That's fine.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. No big deal.
You know. We're free-forming it.
Yeah, we're free-forming it tonight.
This time around, table manners is on page 43.
Yeah, we pushed it back this week. Anyway, we have, like we talked about in the past, actually it was a Jason and I only show, How to Play a Thief. We're going to talk about how to play a cleric this week.
Yeah.
So the first topic of playing a cleric is, what is a cleric? No, I'm kidding. You don't need to know that.
Well, it's your secretary, obviously.
Yes. No, it's not your secretary. What are the
different clerical types from the clerical pool?
You just lost 50 experience points. Go home. What's the different types of clerics to play? And I'm saying cleric, not clerk or anything. Some people say clerk.
Well, since you're bringing it up, clerk is just a derivative of the word cleric. I mean, these are all the same basic things. You know, in our own words, these come from the monks that were originally in the scriptoriums, which is why you have, you know, a secretary who could then eventually be the typist. It's all the same kind of thing.
That bags
and
groceries.
It's a good point, because it brings up, well, what is a cleric based on? Why are we saying cleric instead of priest or monk? You know, because there is a monk in AD&D. There's even, you know, a druid. So why is this the cleric? And, you know, there's a lot of different ways that people play what they're meant to be, whether they're supposed to be modeled on medieval religious orders, or whether they're supposed to be modeled more on medieval battle orders, you know, like the Knights Templar or something like that. And, you know, everybody has a different take on it.
Right.
Yep.
But there are some kind of standards that most people think of when they play a cleric. Like, for example, you said a battle-type cleric. There's also the healer-type cleric, and there's also the mix. and then there's more of the buffing type clerics. So,
see, now I don't make any distinctions there.
Well,
it's interesting that you say that,
like,
I don't
that.
Really make the distinction.
Yeah, I don't make the distinctions either. I know, at least I try not to.
Yeah, I know quite a few people that'll walk into the cleric class and be like, all right, this guy is going to be a straight healer, like Record of Lodos, for example, Nick. You've mm-hmm. seen it. I can't think of the guy's name offhand, but he was just a straight-up priest of, or I should say cleric of, I forget the name of the goddess, but all he did was heal, and he stayed in the mm-hmm. background. You could play someone like that. He never really battled. So
see, I right off the bat, that feels like a different game to me a little bit. That feels like talking about the game as a you know, what's the role of this piece on the board? And I don't. I think if one of my players, if they were doing that, I'd try to push them towards role playing a little bit differently. Now, if you got a cleric who's got a strength of 8,
mm-hmm.
and you know, actually, can a cleric? I'm sounding like an idiot.
Nine.
I don't even know if they're able to have a strength of 8 if they can go that low and still be a cleric.
I think yes, they can.
I think it's only
it's
wisdom.
Just wisdom, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no other.
It's a wisdom. Yeah. It's a wisdom.
Yeah, it's the minimum wisdom of, I believe, 9.
Yeah, 9.
Okay, just making sure I'm not being a total fool.
Okay.
But you know, if you got a cleric who's got a terrible strength. And you know, maybe their constitution is low, and they just wouldn't survive in a fight. And they're lousy at it. Sure, maybe they really focus on their spell casting and on their healing and that type of stuff. But I'd still expect them to fight.
Well, yeah, they could still fight,
right.
But I don't see what's wrong with going into your game saying, "All right, this is what I rolled. I'm going to put this lesser stats into my combat stats and more into my intelligence and wisdom and charisma." And
if
I'm going to
DM lets you roll that way.
Oh, depending, right? However,
right.
Depending on how your DM lets you roll.
Yeah.
And let's just say you roll it up so you want to be a healer. Like, I want to be just the healer type, the talking type, but I will, you know, battle if I have to by using a sling or something. Or
sure.
Throwing
sure.
A
yeah,
rock.
And, you know, I guess that kind of makes sense in terms of the personality and all that kind of stuff. And if we're talking about it like personality, all right. But if somebody says, I'm going to be doing a battle cleric,
okay.
You know, at that point, I'm going to be like, you know what? Maybe you want to be a fighter because you're...
Well, no. Here's... It could be a little bit different. For me, this is actually one of my favorite classes to play.
Right.
I've had a lot of time to play the cleric.
Right.
And I thought a lot about how other people, you know, and seen how other people play it. You know, people just play him as the medic. Because that's
right.
All they think that they're capable of doing.
Medic.
Other people play him like as, you know, the fighting priest.
Right, battle cleric.
You know, but the one thing that I think a lot of people forget, and I think this comes with a lot of the studying in our history, our actual history, at least in medieval history and such, is one of the things that they should be doing is spreading their faith.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is missed by many players when they play a cleric is I think it's all three of those things. If you play all three of those things in a certain fashion, say proselytizing about your faith, healing those and giving aid to those in your party or others, and also when the time comes to it, lending aid in battle in whatever way possible. It might not necessarily be combat, but
true.
It could be in some other fashion. And I'm kind of vague in those three because I think it really depends on what type of god or group of gods your cleric is a follower of. You know, say for example, you know, if you're playing a cleric that's worshiping Odin.
Odin, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, let's go with that.
Okay.
Pretty commonly known god within the game and, you know, Norse mythos. And, you know, he's the head of the Norse mythology. I would say for a cleric like that, you would probably be a lot in the combat and quite a bit into proselytizing about your faiths. But not so much into the healing. Doesn't mean that you won't, but there's certain emphasis that I think depending on which god you might worship.
Yes.
Help flesh your character out more.
I'd like to
You know, it doesn't just have to be a personality thing there.
No, no.
Right.
It can be the spells they're given.
Yeah.
So, exactly. I mean, you nailed it on the head that the number one thing, however you're playing your cleric, if you go in there with a weakling or a smarty or a toughie or whatever, number one, you must be serving a deity. You're there for a purpose. The only reason you get your spells is so that you can do that deity's desire, I guess, on the prime material plane.
Right.
If you're not doing it, you're going to lose.
Think of a perfect example. I'll use a movie. Think about Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade. All those guys in Italy that had the symbol on their chest and they were following around Indiana Jones trying to stop him, but then they wound up helping him towards the end. They just think of them as like battle clerics running around spreading the word of God and their order. That would be what a battle cleric would probably be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a good example right there.
I was just...
Oh, okay. Nick? I don't know. One of you guys started.
Well, one of the things I think also to make the cleric to be a little bit more enjoyable to play.
Yeah.
Because I've seen on polls, like on Dragon's Foot, like between the core four classes or all the subclasses, cleric is somewhere near the bottom.
Yeah, it is.
Which I don't get.
I don't get either.
Which I don't get either.
Because, I mean, you've got a character here who is got some great fighting powers, you know, really get in there and mix it up in a battle, who's got some amazing spells to be casting, tons of fun, can use a lot of different magic items, has scrolls that they can read, all kinds of great little things they can get up to, and is amazingly fun to roleplay because you've got a hook anytime you want. You just pull out the old serving my deity card.
Yep.
I mean, if you look at it just by the numbers-wise, as far as fighting capacity, the cleric is second to the fighter. I mean, it's more powerful than the magic user and thief.
Yep.
I mean, if you're just talking about the core four classes.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're also talking about a character class that can cast spells and still wear armor. Okay?
Without
so
penalties.
How good of a deal is that?
And they don't get the penalties for wearing the armor either.
Exactly, exactly. And this is where I get into, like, even fleshing the cleric class out more is one of the things I'm going to do in my new campaign.
Uh-oh.
And I've done this in the past, and I think it works really well. It makes the cleric a little bit more enticing to play. Mm-hmm. I borrowed this from other games too, and I think this might have come up from later editions, but I think it works in first edition. Is one of the things is giving the cleric a weapon of choice based on what their god uses.
Yeah, that came.
That
came in second edition. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and
I think
that.
It makes sense though.
It does.
You're talking about second edition, but I'm looking here at an article from 1984 by Gary Gygax called "Clerics Live by Other Rules." And he goes in, he starts getting into these things, and I think it's a great way to think about the cleric. And he's talking about, I have to go back and look and see if he's specifically talking about that weapon, but it would certainly fit the spirit of the article, which is that if you have a deity who's predisposed to one type of thing or another, they're going to have spells that they're more interested in giving and less interested in giving. So a deity who is a water god is not going to probably respond to any prayers for what's the opposite of
fire.
Create water?
Fire.
Destroy the opposite water. Of create water. Yeah, that's
water.
That's the reversible one, right? You know, they're probably not going to do that. Evil deities are not going to want you to have protection from evil. Good ones aren't going to want you to have protection from good. So when you pray for your spells, some of them are going to get refused. And on the other side, maybe there's some gods who really want to grant favor in a certain way, either because that god is more powerful or they really think their cleric has an important task to perform. And so they might even give that first-level cleric a third-level spell just for this one time. Mm-hmm. It's a very important moment.
Now, I do remember, now that you mentioned Dragon Magazine, there was an article pre-second edition that someone did on special weapons for clerics based on their gods. I'm trying to remember what issue it was, but it was for first edition. Somebody did it out there. Obviously, it's not canon to the game as far as the regular rules, but you know, someone already thought of it back then, and it can be done. Also, you could even go as far as armor, too, if you wanted to. I mean, you know, obviously a cleric of Odin, they could probably wherever they want. But if you're a cleric of, say, I don't know, Aphrodite, you think that cleric is going to be allowed by their church or their temple? Maybe they frown upon heavy armors or armor at all. So
maybe Odin does too, because maybe it's cowardly to wear it.
Actually, that's a good example, because there is some novels from the Forgotten Realms era that one of the clerics in the book, can't rename, I think his Aiden was his name, he was a cleric of Sun, and he did not wear armor. He only wore very fancy robes and always tried to look his best, because that's what the goddess wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a perfect... I believe that was his name. I'm sorry if I'm quoting it wrong, but that's what it was. So there's your perfect example right there.
I think is you're trying to make the cleric class more enticing by having all these other added things to it, you know? Maybe there's certain weapons with your god, certain armors, and like Jason suggested, maybe certain type of spells. And I think that just makes it a lot more interesting to play. And it maybe adds a little bit of motivation into playing a cleric as well. I mean, just going off for our example as Odin, you know, maybe the choice of weapon for Odin is like maybe a bastard sword or a spear.
Axe.
And or the battle axe, you know. Maybe because of that, your cleric gets a plus one bonus to hit with those weapons. And they can use any type of armor as far as that class is concerned, or you know, make it however you want. So I am keen to using that for the cleric, instead of just like, you know, playing the generic cleric who worships the god Genericus.
Genericus, yeah.
Yes, well, his shield has a barcode on it or something like
cool.
that.
Cool. So. That'd be a cool god to make up. Anyway, so you guys have no objections with letting a cleric have a bladed weapon?
Yes, I do.
Oh, go on, Jason. Express.
Absolutely. No, there's some points where you have to remember we are playing a game.
Right.
And I'll be the first one to speak out against things like game balance and, you know, proper encounters and all that sort of silliness. But, you know, if you start giving clerics swords and axes and such, then you're really stepping into paladin territory as far as I'm concerned. You know, you might as well just play a paladin.
I don't think so, because you're not getting the special abilities of a paladin.
Well, okay, fair, but one of the flavors of a cleric is that they're out there using only blunt weapons, because even though the clerics are spreading the faith, etc., you know, sure, evil gods and different deities and everything, the general idea at the beginning of it all was that they'd be out there doing the fighting just to show some might, but they're really supposed to be spreading the faith. And that going out and drawing blood and deliberately acting like a warrior just meant that you were behaving like some other class. Now,
so an Odin of Thor, a cleric of Thor would not act in a manner
that's... I'm not saying they wouldn't. I'm not saying that I know all that. I can think of all the rationale why this wouldn't be, but if I'm going to the priest in battle kind of thing, you know, if I'm watching MASH and Father Mulcahy picks up a machine gun, it's just not, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me anymore. But ultimately, I mean, the thing is, at some point I have to look at this and say, it says right here in the rule book that clerics don't use edged weapons.
Right.
And I've even used that as an example of a silly rule that I follow anyway, because sure, a mace is quite likely to have spikes on the end, and you know, what's the difference between hitting somebody with a ball with spikes and stabbing them with a sword? But I'm going to follow the rules because it's the way it's set up. It seems to work well that way.
Well,
if you don't do that, you got chaos. You got cats living with dogs. It's just not
living together.
You know what? I have to disagree. Because I just don't think if you're talking about a balance issue, I just don't think it'll be that unbalancing.
Well, I'm not talking about balance. I'm just talking about a rule that's always been there, and it feels weird to watch a cleric pull out a sword, and that's not AD&D to me, so I don't do it.
Well, that came along with 2nd edition when they had that, when the gods were able to grant the the clerics, well, they're priests by second edition, special abilities and special this and that, and they can do the special domains, and that's when it just started getting all wacky, in my opinion. Like Jason said, you stick to the basic.
I mean, yeah, I mean, we should go, like, I guess what I'm saying is kind of like what second edition did, but not so much that it got out of hand, you know? I guess somehow tone it down a bit.
All right, I'm gonna go back to 1980 here. I'm just gonna pull out an article called "No Swords Means No Swords."
I thought you were gonna do a time warp. Let's do the time warp again. Oh, sorry.
Now it's 1980. It might actually be 1979. I'd have to check, but it's Dragon number 33. Short little thing by Lawrence Huss. Not canon, but it's nice to read. And he says it's the club, mace, and flail are but growths of the staff, which stands for guidance and religious authority. Though the end result of the sword stroke and the well-aimed mace blow are the same, the symbolic intent differs. As the high-powered judges our acts, much from a viewpoint in which symbols supersede particulars, this symbolic difference is of greatest importance. In lay terms, okay, the use of edged or pointed weapons has a different theological potency than the use of non-edged ones. Gods, as differentiated from nature deified, tend to desire blood spilled by their servants only under certain highly ritualized circumstances, such as sacrifices and oath swearings. As a result, when a cleric uses a forbidden weapon type and hits, he becomes ritually polluted and loses all ability to use clerical skills and spells. So what I get out of that is kind of good. You know, the idea of you might have these ritual sacrifices where you pull out the dagger mm-hmm. and you do certain things because you're in that moment. And if you do that same thing, if you act like you would in a ritual sacrifice when you're in a profane battle or a mundane, you know, non-sacred ritual moment, it's like blaspheming. So, sure, go ahead and do it, but you're going to lose your spells. You're not going to be able to... You're going to lose the favor of your god unless there's some real serious reason why you just had to blaspheme.
So, I disagree with the article.
No, you can disagree with it. I'm just saying.
I'll give you a reason why.
Okay.
The reason why is, what if your cleric does worship a god of war, and that god of war, part of being a cleric of the god of war is to go out and experience combat and to experience...
Why can't they experience with a blunt weapon? Why do they have to have an edged weapon? It's the same thing.
I can't see why you couldn't use it.
Why? What's the... okay, so he wants to experience combat, but why does he have to experience it with an edged weapon?
Yeah.
Isn't the whole purpose of being a cleric is you're supposed to be... you're supposed to spread the word of your god, but also you're supposed to be doing it...
Maybe your god is very bloodthirsty.
Here's the thing, is the cleric is a sacred... class.
Yeah.
The cleric is supposed to be a conduit to the gods. And so there's certain things that the cleric does that are just different. Just like the magic user has to have access to the world of spells through certain things that he does, the cleric has to have access to his god.
Okay.
And so it means he has to do certain very sacred rituals.
Right.
And if he starts doing things in the profane world that are just like that, mm-hmm. then that's why I'm saying it's like blaspheming. It's like blaspheming through action.
Right. So, which is a perfect segue into the last topic of this issue here. When your deity cuts you off.
Yeah.
Like Jason said, blasphemy and type of things. How would you guys handle that? Through role playing, or are you just one of those, when your deity cuts you off, it doesn't work? I'm going to go through the role play aspect and try to act it out. And
that's nice. I like it.
I like saying, like, I cast Bless and be like, well, you feel the energy of your god coming to you, but then you realize inside your head, for such and such actions you did before, your deity is not granting you this spell at this time.
Yeah, maybe you actually have visions after you do your prayers that tell you what's happening.
Nightmares?
Nightmares, some type of a sign is sent from the heavens, you know, mm-hmm. and that would be really good. What would be a different symbol that would be appropriate for each one? So maybe if you, let's say you worship Hephaestus, the god of blacksmiths,
okay,
that the symbol that's sent to you somehow is a young blacksmith's apprentice comes and is speaking in tongues before you, and that's how you find out. Or,
what's the matter with you, boy?
Yeah. Or, you know, let's not get into Cthulhu, but what the heck? Let's say you're a cleric of Shoggoth.
Ooh.
You know, some great nightmares could come to show you what's happening there. let's say you're worshiping. I'm as you can tell, I'm like jumping around through the deities. I got the book right now, but now I'm looking at Kuan Yin, the goddess of mercy and childbearing. So now the visions are going to come somehow through a midwife or a young mother or a baby. You know, you could really play it up.
You're pregnant. Ah,
yeah.
How did that happen?
goddess,
I've done stuff similar to that in the one I think in the Saltmarsh campaign.
Okay,
we've done something very similar to that. Not necessarily that they were losing their, that they were losing certain contact with their god, but their god would contact them through dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And I played up the dreams as, I forget what the person's god was, but he was like, I played him kind of like a, you know, kind of like a, you know, wise guy kind of like thing. The god he looked like this.
Like
you
I'm
know?
Joe Pesci or something, huh?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so I played him like that. He was like some god of thievery or stealth or something like that. So I kind of played him up like that in the dream. It's like, you see Joe Pesci,
and
he's talking to you like this, you know? So
yeah.
No, and that's some of the fun things being a DM when you can put those images into the player's head and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know my god was like this, but okay, that's cool. You know?
I'm worshiping Joe Pesci. Which version? The casino version or
the Goodfellas version, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Definitely Goodfellas version.
Even better. Your deity is William Shatner, the Star Trek One William Shatner or the Star
god
Trek
God of overacting?
Yeah. Your
I would
cleric.
Have my deity be the Priceline negotiator, William Shatner, actually.
That would be a good one. You probably have a high charisma at that point, right?
I'm not going to give you that spell.
To give you that spell.
You can do the... See, I can't do impersonations. I don't even try.
Yeah,
you're good at it.
Spunk.
But I don't think it has to be even something as mystical as a vision every time.
Danny Crane.
Because, you know, a lot of times it's just going to be either the players themselves, or if they're not picking up quickly enough, you know, have the NPCs do it. But just be completely shocked at the cleric's behavior and just let them know by the way that they're looking at them. Like, did you really just do that?
I kind of like the old Monty Python thing when the god looks through the cloud and is like, no! Yes. One of those things.
Stop that groveling.
Stop that.
The thing I can't stand is groveling.
Actually, I have to retract that. I want to pick the William Shatner from T.J. Hooker days as my god.
I don't even remember what we said on that show.
Nothing.
I've mixed it up with Hawaii Five-0 and Dragnet. I don't even remember.
Just think of Shatner in a uniform with his gut sticking out running around.
I do that every day.
All right, cool.
I think of that all the time. But, you know, we were mentioning blasphemy and that kind of stuff, and it got me thinking about a book that I read a while back about the history of swearing.
Yeah.
And, you know, because the idea that the words that we use now for swear words as being so harsh and words that are, you know, scatological in nature or sexual or whatever, those really were not the big swear words. That's very recent. It's only in the past maybe 100, 150 years. You go back any farther than that, and it was all religious. You know, if you really wanted to say something terrible, you just invoked a religious term. You know, if you went to the Old West, you know, when they showed Deadwood on HBO, they had to change the way everybody swore, because if they actually did it, it would have sounded silly.
Yeah.
People would have just, you know, said something blasphemous, and that would have been the biggest thing. And so naturally, if a priest did it, you know, everybody would completely fall over. There was a member of parliament in Britain that was actually removed from his post for swearing.
Wow.
He was kicked out of parliament because he went around and he used to just say things like, I swear to God this was a wonderful steak, you know, or whatever. You know, I said that was a meal fit for Jehovah. Don't he said it. Throw the stones. You know, but that's
all I said was a meal fit for Jehovah.
Now they're saying it. You know, so if your cleric is doing things that the actions are just as blasphemous, well, then everybody else is going to probably react just like that, and they won't even have to get a vision. They'll know by all the townspeople who just stared in horror at what they just did.
Yeah, good call.
Mm. All right. So be a cleric,
play it up.
It's a man's life in the clerical army.
Yes.
The clerical pool.
I'd like to know on TV when they started loosening up the rules so people can actually start saying things. I mean, I know you said you were in marketing, Jason.
Well,
when did
MASH...
Be-
MASH was actually one of the first things. There was an episode of MASH in...
Don't say any of the words, but you know what I'm talking
about. No, I won't say the words, but there was an episode of MASH in one of the last seasons when Alan Alda was directing and writing it, and he wanted to call somebody an SOB, but okay. Spell it out and really say it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were not going to let that through, and he had to actually argue the point that it had such... emotional importance and impact, that it was the only way that they could get that across. And they sat with the censors and they finally said, okay, this one time you can actually say that.
Yeah.
And it was a big moment. I remember when it aired and what a kind of shocking moment it was in television. And, with every year since, it's just sort of denigrated until you got to the point where you had the South Park episode where they were saying, oh, whatever.
So, yeah, it's true. But, what was it? I remember the big event back in the 80s was the Golden Girls when they said the B word to one another.
Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't have been able to say that if it hadn't been for Alan Alda getting away with it on MASH. And, there was a point, I don't know if, anybody can even say a religious sort of a, gee, damn it, spell that whole thing out. I mean, there's...
That's actually an acceptable term for radio and TV since 1990.
So, so clerics shouldn't do that.
Yeah. All right, cool. We'll
and they should not have swords.
Well, you just had to throw that last little jab in there. Ah, but you can't jab because you're using a mace.
I wasn't jabbing. That was
I know, because you're using a mace.
Children. Children.
I'm sorry.
Oh, wow. Let's go into our last segment, boys.
Blasphemer.
Ooh, one of those electronic voting dealies.
You two are such children. Our last segment of the
Dude,
night.
Dude, we're talking about a game with fairies and dragons in it.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
So our last
tough... Fairies and dragons, okay?
Nick, you lost 50 experience points, too.
No!
Anyway, so we put up a new poll on the website. This one I thought was kind of interesting. What type of game do you enjoy the most to play? I put down a couple options, and you guys should vote too. Option number one is, Jason, you'll probably vote like four times, knowing you somehow. a long, epic campaign with maps and props. Level 36, here I come, baby. Well, I didn't put the baby part. A short campaign, same characters. A pickup game with no obligations. That sounds like a date somewhere. I gotta change that. I don't like to play. I just like to read the books and tell others how they should play. Number one, leading in the poll right now with 63% is a long epic campaign with maps, props, and level 36. Here I come. That's what I picked too. What do you guys think, Nick?
Yeah, that's one I picked as well. I mean, I like a long epic campaign. What can I say? Yeah. I mean, a short one isn't so bad, but I mean, you just build up a lot more story with the longer one.
Yeah,
it's more fun.
I would vote for the short campaign, actually, because, there's no reason you can't return to it later and do things, but it's nice to wrap up some loose ends within a couple of months or, maybe 6 months at the most.
But you can only mark your ballot with a crayon because you're a cleric. You can't use a pen.
Oh, right. We're leaking over segments now. Cut it out.
Define long, epic, and short. I would say long, epic is probably something that takes 3 or 4 years at least.
I love hearing a story, sitting down, and then someone like, oh, dude, I just finished a 6-year campaign, and my cleric was level 35, and we went through the mountain. I love listening to those stories. I don't know about you guys, but I do.
Oh, I love listening to them. Yeah, I'm just thinking, with the campaigns that I'm starting right now, I expect them to run for probably about, 6 months, at least to get through the story arc. Not saying the campaign's going to end, but I like a story arc that can at least be tied up.
Yeah.
That's something to talk about in a future episode, campaigns and story arcs, as opposed to just winging it every week. So there's another little topic for us to talk about.
All right.
Yay.
Cool. And RFIPodcast.com, RFI staff@gmail.com. Well, that's going to put another wrap on the show. It's been a fun week. We're going to be
it's
heading
It's been cool.
In. Yeah. This was a little short show, only. Right, Jason? Short show, right?
Yeah, we were going to do a short show. We did a regular one.
Yeah, well, we love you people, so we decided to do a full
show. Sure we do. Why not?
Well,
keep listening, please.
Keep listening. Keep downloading. Keep supporting. Go to the website. Comment on the articles. We appreciate that. Come, go on Dragon's Foot. D20 Radio likes your comments, too. A lot of people have been commenting on there about certain things.
Head over to the deadgamesociety.com.
Yes. DGSociety.com, as we are an official member of Dead Game Society.
Yay!
They have their nice little forums there, and they've actually went and took my suggestion and color-coded people for like certain things that they do. So it's kind of neat. So if you got a ring, Jason, when you sign up, you get a special color code now.
Excellent.
You can be a special person.
Excellent. Well, I've always been told I was.
Well, I didn't.
Well, that's what they said when I had to get on the short bus, anyway.
Wow.
And with that explains a lot.
Yeah. And with those thoughts, we're going to leave this week by saying keep it original, keep it old school, and keep your cleric with blunt weapons. Good night, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Woohoo!
Roll for initiative.